What up, my generation? Hope you're doing amazing. In this episode, we're talking about unemployment, aka fun employment. With my friends Yasmin and Juanu, we're sharing our experiences when we were unemployed in the pandemic, ladies and gentlemen, and we're sharing tactics, tools, strategies that we use in order to find a job. We're also sharing how we handled rejections and some mental barriers that we called visa, for example, for non-EU citizens, and also the kind of lessons that we learned in this period of time that is difficult, but actually, if you look deeper and you change your perspective, it can teach you a lot about yourself. So tune in, and if you're not unemployed, maybe you want to share this with the person who is, so you can help them out. Cheers!
Welcome to a new episode of My Generation with Ines, the podcast that challenges different perspectives on different topics and brings one that my generation would love to hear.
So welcome everyone to this episode of My Generation with Ines. I'm very happy to have with me Yasmin and Juanu. So like I was introducing them, they both went on a journey of unemployment and they successfully got out of it. And we are here to grasp all the lessons and what they learned throughout all this journey. So hello guys to the show. Welcome Yasmin. Welcome Juanu.
Hi, thank you.
Hey.
So you both of you, you had a different journey on being unemployed. Just a bit for the audience to get to know you. Maybe each one of you presents a bit of his like background in terms of like studies and in terms of current career, what you're doing right now. So ladies first, Yasmin, maybe you can start.
All right. So hey, everyone. Thank you for listening to Ines's podcast and supporting her project first. And then, so just a quick introduction about my academic and professional background. So basically, I got a bachelor's degree from Tunis Business School. I was majoring in marketing and minoring in international political economy. And then I traveled to France to get my master's. So I got a master's of science in international marketing and business development from Schema Business School. Then during this master's, I interned for a major ophthalmic lens maker here in France. So I'm not going to be mentioning companies' names, but basically I was working for the world leader in this industry in their international headquarters here in France. Then basically, I earned a temporary contract with one of this group's companies, company branches. Then I had a tiny, unemployment part. I say tiny because it was around a month or so, and it was during the pandemic. Then I landed a contract in another lens maker, but this time they're a Japanese one. That's another story. So basically, yeah, that's what I did. So basically I was a product manager, a marketing product manager in three companies. But each time it's like a different, context. It's a different, type of jobs, but mm-hmm. it's all in the same industry. And this is a point we'll get back to you, about later.
Juanu. So for,
awesome. So my journey, I think it's quite different, from Yasmin. Actually, my academic background, it's in industrial design. I have a bachelor's in industrial design. So it's more about like the creative and innovation field. And after graduating, I worked for some years in a design studio in a startup in Mexico, where I'm originally from. And after working there for some years, I made a big career change and I started working for the non-for-profit sector. So basically, I was volunteering and then having a full-time job in Mexico and in Canada and having the chance to work for youth leadership, as we used to say. And I work for the nonprofit sector almost for like full-time, like maybe 4 or 5 years. I had a chance to work in Netherlands and in Canada, and it was very nice. But as rewarding as it is, I think that the non-profit sector also has a lot of trade-offs, like low budget and difficult career aspirations. So I also, after some years, I decided that I wanted to have another career change. And then that's when the unemployment happened, that I guess we will be talking more about this in the podcast.
Yeah, we were talking a bit offline about how unemployment is actually a lifestyle, you know, like it's a state of mind as well. When I went on an unemployment, I was like hashtag funemployment, which is something I learned from my friends that I worked with back in ISIC. So we were like saying funemployment, you know, trying to look to the good side of it. So how was the funemployment journey for you both? I mean, you both had totally different perspective, because Yasmin, it was for 1 month. Juano, it was for 1 year. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
So maybe let's start with Yasmin. Like, how was it for you in 1 month? How was the routine, the pressure? And also especially that you lived unemployment. You're originally from Tunisia and you lived unemployment when you finished your internship and you were in France. So that's like, even though the period is not long, but being in a foreign country, looking for a job in a foreign country, I think that's challenging. So tell us more.
Yeah, actually, I said that like my unemployment did not last long, but I did not know it was not going to last long. So for me, I was going under a lot of pressure because there are so many constraints. To give some context to people listening to us, as a non-European resident here in France, when you graduate from school, you have a maximum 1 year to stay in France to get a job. So there is a deadline to get a job and be able to stay in the French territory. So I had this first constraint going on. The second constraint is that I'm living in another country that is not my own, and I have to have to be autonomous, to pay my rent, to pay my bills, because, you know, bills keep running, right? Even if you don't work, you still have bills to pay. This was my second constraint. And the third constraint is for me to keep my mindset really focused, because we were in the midst of a pandemic.
Yeah.
This was still in the, the beginning of September of 2020, which is right before the second lockdown in France. So the situation was a bit better, but it's still very off. It's still very not normal. So what I did, I was like, I'm here on a mission. I have a deadline. If whether we like it or not, we have a deadline, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if I want to keep focused and stay focused, I need to organize myself. So for me, my main focus was to not get drained by the process, because the process of job hunting can be very, very draining. Sometimes you get so much into it that it just like takes your soul away. So
did you take a break? We will get into how did you search, but
yeah,
how did you live the unemployment? How did your day look like? How did you
actually literally like what I did, I would wake up every morning. I kept that habit of waking up on time as if I had a class or a meeting or something to do. So I kept waking up at that same time I used to wake up to every day. So I was like, I'm not going to start waking up at noon because that just kills your energy. Then the second thing I did, I was like, okay, let's say from 9 to 12, I'm going to be sending out CVs,
yeah,
etc., emails. Then I would either have lunch or just go out and eat outside and then do something in the afternoon. So like every day I kept something that I aspired to. So it's either like simple thing like, okay, tomorrow, I know that tomorrow in the afternoon, I'm going to go grocery shopping. Okay, I know that like next Tuesday, I have a museum to go to, because back in September, museums were still open, you mm-hmm. know, art galleries were still open. So I would literally go online and try to find activities in Paris that I can do. So I can keep myself busy in the afternoons, because to me it was out of question to keep just sending out CVs the entire day and then go to sleep, because I knew that that type of thing would be very, very tiring, especially that we're still in a pandemic. I still cannot meet people and I don't have my family and my support system around. I mean, they are virtually, but they're not here next to me physically.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, it was mornings for sending out job applications. Afternoons, I have to get something done.
Nice.
I have to get something done for myself for fun. It's either I learn something or I just go out and take some air. So for me, that was the routine during the entire time.
Nice. And you kept that for the whole month. You didn't know how much it's going to last, but if it would last like 5 months, you would keep on doing that.
I would have kept doing that. I mean, I would have found some other ways around it, because later on, you know, the lockdown happened, but I would have still tried to figure something out. I mean, I would have, there were like some days where I didn't have anything to do. So basically all I did is just put on some like jeans, put on some leggings, put on your sneakers, and then just go out and take some air.
Nice.
So I just wouldn't stay in the house for the entire day, because it doesn't make any sense to me.
Nice. So for those who are listening, Yasmin, I think that's very clear takeaway. Like, wake up as if you're still studying or still have your own routine. Would you reward yourself somehow in the afternoon or whatever with an activity, and keep that. It's like working time, but instead you're doing job search. Juano, for you, it was 1 year. Maybe that was like more draining in terms of energy. And it happened also in a pandemic. And also you later on, you were employed in an AU country from Mexico to Ireland. So also like the visa thing, etc. Tell us more about that.
Yeah. So I think that, I mean, your mental health needs to be your number one priority when you're so unemployed for so long. And people don't realize that you're going to go through a very crazy journey of like questioning yourself. How good you are, why are you not getting the job? Mm-hmm. And I think that is very important that you take care of yourself in that sense. I think that I did a very similar approach of what Yasmin was saying. Like I was also having a routine. I was waking up early and trying to schedule my time of job hunting, because a lot of people say that looking for a job is a full-time job. I disagree at some extent, because it's not going to take you 8 hours to find a job. You know, you need to keep you need to fit other activities in your day, like exercising or doing courses. I was trying to like learn French, learn SQL, learn programming, like trying to do other things. But when you're unemployed for so long, this routine will becomes at some point like useless. And for me, it was also very hard, because I started doing this in January and February, but then when the pandemic hit in March, I was not even able to send CVs, because just like all the job postings were frozen. So it didn't make a lot of sense for me to continue sending CVs on applications where like there was so much uncertainty going around, and I knew that I wanted to come to Europe. And Europe was basically just like completely frozen, that I needed to focus on myself as well, and what are the skills that I can learn that it will be useful again once like people start hiring again. So I think it's also safe to say that if the routine is not working anymore, feel comfortable changing it and doing new things, and like maybe change the physical activity that you're doing, or maybe change before, maybe you were sending CVs in the morning, maybe change them to the afternoon, and try to find the routine that makes sense for you.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah, because also I went through the unemployment phase, and what I realized is like, I once told you say like mental health is number one priority, and I would 100% agree. But I also like, I was talking to myself, like, what are the odds that I'm going to be unemployed in my life? Like eventually I'm going to work. So this is like an opportunity to do like things that I've always wanted to do, you know? So for me, it was like in terms of sports, boxing. So I started doing that. But like, that's also for everyone who's listening that is unemployed. Like, also try to shift a bit the perspective, because that really helps, you know. At the end of the day, you will go back to work and you will have that routine again, 9-to-5 job or whatever it is.
Exactly. Actually, I want to get back to what you're saying. Like he said, yes, for how long am I going to stay unemployed? Like for me, to be honest, it was the best time I have had in 2 years. Because during that time, although I was like unemployed, and during almost the entire time, because I've been looking, like, although I was working, I was looking as well, but I did not have any anything like like I didn't have any opportunities, any offers on the table. I did not have any visibility, but still for me, it was the best time I've ever had. I had the time to do all the things I haven't gotten the time to do for like 2 years, although I was not able to travel, but I was able to go out and see the places I've never seen in Paris. I'm like, I've been living in this city for like almost a year and a half and haven't seen much of it, you know, right? So I was like just going out, and even like you said, for you, it was sports. For me, it was going out, testing new food, seeing new spots, seeing museums I've never gotten the opportunity to see. And it's just, I think like the key here is just not to think of unemployment as something miserable, like something sad.
Yes.
Try to think of it as it's either something that's going to take you to a better place, or it's either an opportunity for you that you can make the best out of.
Yeah.
It's not the best. I'm not saying that we should be like all happy and unicorns during unemployment, but we need to think of it as part of the process.
Yeah.
It's part of the process. It's something that we would go through, but you make either the best or the least out of it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I 100% agree. And I think because for my case, it was a bit different. Like I already left Germany, then came back here, then find a job here, back to Germany. And like, so it was a bit complicated. But then when I came back here for like a couple of months, and I'm still actually in Tunis, you know, in my unemployment, but like, I know I have a job, but I'm still waiting for the papers. But like I consumed this time to do everything that I wanted to do, like even like volunteer and film festival that I've always wanted to do. But also there was these parts when I still, for example, did not have a job myself, or you guys, when you need to balance between, okay, I'm gonna take advantage of this period of time, and also how I'm balancing handling rejections at the same time, because from one side you're trying to, you know, lift yourself up, and from the other side you're getting no's. And I remember when I was in Germany looking for jobs, like I had so many rejections that it was like, I remember once, like, you know, I invested so much in the application and it's something I wanted, and then I had an interview, then I was rejected, and I felt it, you know. And then I was like, I had to, you know, sit with myself. And I remember, like, you know, I even cried that day because I had so much emotions that I need to let it out. And then I came back on track, you know. So how was that, you know, balancing both, you know, for you?
I think that it's very interesting what you're saying, like the rejections and handling the feelings and everything. It's a very interesting journey. The first thing that I would say is, like, sometimes when you're facing rejections, then you don't want to do other like fun activities. I remember, like, my case, like my friends would say, like, oh, let's go to the movies, of course, before the pandemic, let's go to the movies, or like, let's do this. And then but I just got rejected. Like, I don't get to do things that I enjoy because I need to put more effort into like finding a job, you know. But that's not completely true. It's just like your mental negative loop that you go and like, I don't deserve to do activities that give me joy because I still don't have a job. So I should focus on getting a job. But I think that on the contrary, like, it's super important that you get joy from somewhere else and that you learn of like how to mix this. And it's also okay to take a break. I remember around May. So I started my full employment period in September. So in May, it was already, what, like 8 months. And I got one of the most difficult rejection that I remember. And they let me know, like, maybe at 9 a.m. Because it was in Europe, so it was like 3 p.m. So they called me and they said that they canceled the job offer. So like the job posting. So that completely changed the mood of my day. And I was like, okay, I need to get out of here. And I just like went and I started walking and walking and walking. And maybe I walked for like 3 hours until I like chilled and I like calmed down. And it was like, okay, it's fine. I got another no, time to go back home and start doing the job again. But that day I decided that I was going to give myself like the day off. I didn't go back into like applying because I needed to process it. I needed to do things that I liked. I watched movies, I called some friends, and then the next day I started again. So I think that it's very okay to give yourself a day off after facing with a rejection.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, it's very important to understand that our rejections are going to happen and that you need to take a break, like Juano said. But another thing for me, and I heard this somewhere, and when I heard this, it was like an aha moment for me. So like rejections for me at the beginning, at first, because like I said, I was even looking when I was already having another job. So I was taking rejections personally, like I was taking rejections. I was like, okay, they rejected me because I'm not good enough, or like they rejected me because this and this, I'm this and I'm that. But then what we need to understand is that rejection, once again, is part of the process. That rejection is not against you. personally, because, you know, sometimes HR work in fun ways, and sometimes things do not work out for a reason. And especially like the break part, I would say, comes very often after jobs and opportunities that you really, really, really wanted, because sometimes you do send out applications, but there are ones that you look for the most. Sometimes you find this posting and you're like, okay, this is for me, this is perfect fit for me, and then you apply for it, and then when you get a no, this is when you feel very, very down. Like, so it's okay, just like when that happens, just take a break and somehow grieve this opportunity, give it time to process, and then move on, and then move on. There are other opportunities waiting for you, or that you may run into. And rejection is also something that is very important, because sometimes you are rejected for a reason. There is something that you didn't do well, or probably there is something that did you not present as you should. So it's an opportunity for you to look through how you are doing things. Probably you can see another perspective. Probably you can learn something from that rejection. And the biggest, the most important tip that I heard and that I really helped me through all of this personally is to understand and to be fully aware that we are not our jobs. I think that's what makes unemployment yeah. very tough, because we think our value lays in our job. You're unemployed, you are employed, you are 100% amazing and productive, and you are a great part of the community or society or whatever. You are unemployed, you are worthless. That is not true. I think that's, once you realize that, you will understand that this is nothing but a process, this is nothing but a journey, and this does not define who you are, because being unemployed is not related to you personally. It's related to so many circumstances that we've been talking about from the very beginning.
Yeah, I think that's a very important disclaimer. And like I was sharing, like I remember like this opportunity for me that exactly like you mentioned, like that I really wanted, but at that same period of time there were a lot of things going on in my life that I was already down, you know, like I was already down and looking for a job because I needed the job, obviously. So that when it's like, I think it's very important to make the thin line between whatever is going on with your life and looking for a job. And that's also, I think, one tip that a friend gave to me is like, just separate both and separate yourself personally, because you're not your job, you're not your achievements, like you are who you are, simply, you know, and whatever you do, that's an add-on to that. Awesome. Yeah, so here I wanted to jump like from dealing with rejections to, I think we all came to a point, the three of us, I think we share this, which is cool, is that here also I know like a lot of people who are following are from North America, Latin America, and especially North Africa. And for those here, for those who are looking for job, let's say in countries that require visa, whether in Europe or other. And I was in that case. And I remember one of the jobs that I wanted was that I needed to, they like in the email, rejection email, they say that I needed to be able to work in that X country, you know, and I was disappointed because like the company is supposed to be, you know, diversity, etc. So when I went to another interview, I was very clear from the beginning, look, I'm going back to Tunisia, I need to take a break, and I'm not an AU citizen, so if you're gonna hire me, I'm gonna apply from Tunisia all over again. And that is the job I got eventually, because I was in like very clear from the beginning. But that kind of visa requirements, a lot of people say, use it sometimes as an excuse, like, oh, they're not gonna expect me anyways, accept me anyways, and they do not apply. I listened to a lot of my friends, especially North Africans and Latin Americans, that they speak about this like problem of visa, and like with the coronavirus already happening, they give to themselves like more, let's say, challenges. So we, all of us need visa here. How did you deal with that? Maybe Juan, you can tell us, because you applied from Mexico, and how was it for you?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was very clear that I wanted to come back to Europe. As I was saying before, in 2017 and 18, I was working in Europe already. So it's very funny because I think that a lot of people that requires visa just think that it's like an extra difficult part of the process, which like, yes, as Ines was saying, like some companies won't take you just because there is an extra step required. But in my experience, it's just like a mental barrier that we put. I mean, maybe it's only my personal experience, but I got more first and second interviews for jobs that I was applying in Europe than for jobs that I was applying in Mexico, because at some point I was already applying in Mexico. So I would just say, like, be very clear, as Ines was saying, so there is no surprises in the middle of the process. But also check before, like maybe in their own websites on this kind of stuff, like if they actually have like people from other nationalities that are not EU citizens working already, and that usually says that will say like, okay, yes, they there is a possibility that they will take you.
Yeah.
You said, like Juano said an important thing here. He said it's a mental barrier. And I think it's like, this is something that a lot of people should stop doing, because sometimes they're like, oh, I'm not a EU citizen. I'm not an EU citizen. I'm never going to get this opportunity. They're not going to want me because I'm not an EU citizen. And without even trying in the first place, I'm like, just go ahead and try and give it a shot, because you never know. And this is something that I learned from an HR of a company I was working for like 2 years ago when I was at this company. And like my time with them was over. I did not have any opportunity coming up. Other opportunity coming up, and then I wanted to go home, but then I just stopped thinking about going home, because I was like Ines said, if I go home, I'm doomed, I'm done, I'm never gonna get another opportunity. So this HR was like, no, you go home and take a rest, and if an employer wants you enough, they will do the job and they will take the effort to make you come back here. And that is important, because most of the time, if you have what it takes and you are the person they need for that job, they would not care if you are from North Africa, if you're from North America, they do not mind. They literally will make people come from anywhere in the world because they are the person that has what it takes. So it's not, to me, it's not a barrier. Like it's not even a constraint. It is an additional step in the process, but it's not something that would stop the process.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And here I want to give the shout out to everyone who is listening. In the first episode, my guest was Dali Shaban, and he's like a senior talent acquisition. And I remember when I was like talking with him about jobs, he told me to put my value on the table, whether visa, whether salary areas, like have enough confidence to put your value on the table and things would work out. Awesome. So from rejections to how you strategically approach looking for jobs, because that's also a different story. And I think that makes a difference also. The one who's searching for jobs should think how to, I would say, like smart shortcuts to make you grab the opportunity that is suitable for you. So I'm interested to know how was for each one of you. Yasmin, maybe you can tell us in that 1 month, what did you do differently to get a job in 1 month? Tell us your secrets.
Actually, it's no secret, but it's me being the impatient person that I am. So what I did, I was thinking, all right, this is my experience. This is what I've done. So I was a global brand manager. I was a product marketing, marketing product manager, and did this and that. So what are we doing? This is a pandemic. A lot of industries are shut down. A lot of industries are slow, but a lot of industries have literally flourished and risen back. And some of them have risen back from the dead because of this pandemic. So I was thinking, all right, I am in France during the pandemic. Which industries and which companies have profited from this pandemic? So I was thinking the food industry. I was thinking supermarket chains. And so these are the type of industries who were, and big pharma, of course. So I would go to websites of these companies like Carrefour, Auchan, and any other type of company that has profited from this pandemic, because I knew they would definitely be hiring, and they were. So I would apply in companies from industries that are not down, and I would apply for jobs that are similar to what I have done in like beforehand. So if I was previously a marketing product manager, I was not running and applying for something in a field that I have not touched before, because I knew I would have in normal times, but this was a pandemic. I had to be very, very, very specific and target in a very like close niche to what I did. And then the other approach that I did, which was the one that worked for me, ideally, it was like to go discover another industry. I'm not saying that the industry I'm in is something that I don't like. It's quite the opposite. It's something that I genuinely love. But I was thinking, all right, for the past year and a half, I acquired so much experience and I have grown so much and learned so much about the optical industry. So what do we have in the optical industry today in France? We have lens makers and we have glasses frame makers. So once again, I went online and took out the names of lens makers and frame makers and optical store chains, and looked if they were hiring. So I just sent out applications to people who are specialized in this field, because I have the experience in marketing and I have the experience in the optical industry. So I worked at a very, very targeted niche and sent out applications, and eventually it worked, because for me, I was looking in something that I already knew how to work in, and they were looking for someone who already knew this industry, because it's a very specific, it's something very specific that when you work in the optical industry. So that worked for me, because I literally applied for something that is in my field of competencies, and that is my field of knowledge in terms of industry. So to sum up and to be very, very strategic, is you either work in industries that are either recovered from this pandemic, industries who have flourished from the pandemic, or industries that you have already worked in and have experience in, because your experience is very valuable and you're not going to throw it away just because. So so just think targeted in terms of opportunities and industries.
Yes, I think that's very true. And if I can also like add on that, because my process was very long, right? So I think that I was even questioning if my tactics were the right ones after like 6 months or 7 months, 8 months. I'm like, okay, I'm not getting the job. So take that, like, of course there is something wrong that I'm doing and that I need to change in my approach of getting a job. So I think that the first thing that I would actually give advice to everyone that is listening to us is that stop romanticizing like your approach of getting a job. A job is not like finding the love of your life. There is not only one single unique opportunity that you will find that it will match 100% with all your aspirations. Like at the end of the day, a job is something that will make you grow, that will invest you with new skills, or that you will learn something out of it, and that potentially you will build a career on it and maybe like have more opportunities. But it's also true that maybe at some point of your career, you will want to change your role or the company or your industry. So don't go out there in your job hunting process thinking that you will find only one opportunity that is 100% right for you. Be open to many opportunities. The way that I was seeing it is like, there are many elements that comes with like a job posting that you see. It's the industry, it's the company, it's the job or the role, is where it is located, the city or the country, and of course the salary. And all these five elements are very important. But for me, it's like, okay, what are my non-negotiables? Like, what are the things that I'm not willing to compromise? Like, I'm not gonna work for a company that, like, for example, is unethical, or I'm not gonna work in X or Y industries that I don't see myself going into the future, like a long-term investment. Or I'm not gonna go to a country that I wouldn't feel, I don't know, like that I can fit with society or something else. So find your non-negotiables, but be open about like other opportunities that might come that doesn't feel 100%. So just go for them and you will learn something out of the process. Perhaps you're not even going to get the job, but the learning that you will get through going into the recruitment process of that specific role will get you more insights about what are you doing right, what are you doing wrong, how is HR perceiving you, and what should you change in your approach. And something else that I want to share with the people that are hearing us is at some point I was very like convinced, let's say, that I wanted a job in X role. And then the more that I was getting interviews and that I was hearing myself, like how well I was like presenting myself in other type of roles, and that I was getting a lot of success, like trying like moving to next stages of the process in the other type of role, I realized that, okay, there is an evident match between like these type of roles and what I can give to companies. So then I changed my approach completely, and that's when I got this job. So also hear yourself, see what are the interviews that you're being successful, and go for them.
Nice. I definitely share a couple of things with you, but for example, in my case, I was also reaching out to my network. I see a lot of people like on LinkedIn, like they post, for example, their CV, or like they post like a post like, yeah, I finished this internship, etc. So my approach, I didn't do that, but like I reached out to a couple of people that I know, and I tried to talk with them. And I remember once I reached out to this friend of a friend, and I recorded myself literally talking to him and explaining my experience. And then on another interview, I also recorded myself in the interview, and then I listened to myself. I didn't get that job, by the way, the interview. But then when I listened to myself, I realized, like, where do I stop? Where are my that are not clear? And that was very good, because like in the next interviews, I was more at ease. I realized, you know, what I'm doing. Do you have any like specific tactics, for example? Also, I did, for example, a spreadsheet where I classified things. If you have like these tactics that people can use, that would be awesome.
Yes, I did actually a spreadsheet as well, as you were saying. So I was tracking, of course, what is the job opportunity that I applied? When did I apply? What was the salary range, and like different stuff? And I was like having different columns with like first interview, second interview, third interview, and this kind of stuff. Like, was it a referral, or did I approach the job opportunity, and this kind of stuff? And that helped me out. So it's kind of like trying to get insights from different processes, and which one are you more successful? But also something that you said about recording yourself and approaching friends. I mean, I don't know if that was the thing that change, but for the job that I got, the one that was actually the one, like the one that was successful, when I saw it, I was like, I need to get this one. You know, it just went to my head and was like, this is the one. I don't know why. And then what I did is I have a friend that she works in HR. She is a recruiter, but I didn't approach her to get a job because it's a very different industry. But the bottom line of the story is I called her. And her name is Selene. And I was like, Selene, you need to help me out. I need to land this job interview. So what we did is that we did a fake interview. So she prepared questions. I sent her the job opportunity. She prepared questions of it. It was in English, of course, because I wanted this job in another country. And then she took pointers. And then after we finished like the interview, it was very serious. We were not even like, hi, how are you? Like, we're friends. Like, she was like, this is going to be like a formal interview. And then she gave me pointers, and he's like, okay, so this question, you didn't answer my question. You were just like going around. And this one is not exactly what the responsibilities of the job is. And that like, let's say, dry run of that interview changed completely how I approach the actual job interview that happened 2 days later. And I mean, I'm not sure if that's what made me land the job, but at the end of the day, I got it. So
it definitely helps.
It does help, because practice is very important. It's very important that you get practice, and it's really great that you got to do this this sort of simulation to real job interview. And I think that's a lot of it's something that a lot of job seekers not forget, but they don't pay much attention to, because I know for sure that today in 2021, if you are graduating from school, I know that most schools now have they have either job accelerators, or they have specific coaches that help you with the process of job search. And in those in those accelerators, they often have coaches who help you to have this type of exercise and this type of practice that Juano just referred to, where you have someone actually telling you questions from real job interviews, or like just that would describe just like how the process would go. And it's very something very important, because once you answer that question or once you have a reply, sometimes it just gets back, gets in the back of your head, and it's easier for you to answer to the same question again in a real job interview. And if you're like a job seeker who's already graduated, you can always look into local types of coaching that are most of the time available for free for something that are part of the government policies for job seekers and unemployed people. So practice is a very, very important point that I think we don't take enough into consideration. We take the CV part, we take the cover letter part, but when it comes to the interview, it's very important to practice as well, because that's actually the only one or two times the employer is going to actually talk to you one-to-one.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think also, just to add on that, because for example, in my case, like I went through a lot of interviews also before in the organization in Juanu, you know, this also is me. And I think we should never fall into the trap of, oh, I know, I've been through a lot of interviews, because you always don't know enough. We always don't know. And like, I also did like, I was looking on YouTube on like tactics for interviews. I even signed up like for free courses, and I had like my notebook to write down. And something very important is that, which I did in the job I eventually landed, is I went the extra mile in the case study. Like I went to steps before and beyond what the task was about. So like, that like even when they were asking their questions, they said like, you already went the extra about what we were going to ask. So also for job seekers, like never underestimate preparation. No matter how much you know, you don't know enough. That's like 100%. I don't know if you have anything to add in this regard.
And I think it's not just like preparation of the content itself. I think it's the fact that you are prepared takes off so much of your anxiety and the stress and the pressure that you have on your shoulders the day of the actual interview. So the fact that you know that you are prepared, you are ready, more chill, more relaxed, and for sure you're going to be more effective in the way that you will be answering questions. And of course, the fact that you have prepared and know the company that you're interviewing for, because it's not a blind date where you don't know anything, or a blind test about the company. You should know at least a minimum about what they do.
Totally. Like, I do your homework. If you're looking for a job, do your homework. We live in an age in which like there is a lot of resources out there online. So go to the company's website, see their YouTube videos, try to understand what are their values, what are they trying to build. Go to Glassdoor, go to LinkedIn, try to see if you have any connection that might like what was working there, or that I might give you a little bit of insights about the process. Glassdoor is a very valuable resource that you can see actually how the recruiting process goes and the experiences from other people. So go there, do your homework, and come prepared.
Awesome. So guys, to sum it up, I think I'm glad that we shared a couple of like tactics, let's say tangible things for those who are listening. What are you most grateful for during your unemployment?
Personally, it was rejection, like the rejections that I got, because they actually made me aware of things I was not aware of. Like I had rejections from internal interviews from the same companies that I used to work for, and it made me realize things that I don't see in myself as a marketing product manager. So because you're like a fish in the water, you don't see yourself, or you don't see how you look from outside or what you do from outside. So rejection is important because you can get feedback. Also, rejection was important because I understood where I went wrong, or not went wrong, or what I did not do best at certain things. And then you're like, okay, you learn and you tick something and you add something to yourself, because that helped me improve myself. And that helped me improve myself and work more on myself and how I present myself, etc. So rejection was very, I'm very, very grateful for that. I was not at the time, to be honest. I was like, for at some point, I was like crying. I'm like, I'm never going to get a job again. I'm going to be unemployed for the rest of my life. But being rejected really did help me throughout the process. So, and another thing that I was grateful for is also to have the support of people from my entourage and people who know me who are not even my friends, you know, but people who are there to lend a helping hand, because that is important when you are unemployed and you feel down.
Yeah. And I mean, because as Inés was saying before, I was in Mexico, it's not only in Mexico, but I was in my hometown. So I left my hometown when I started university. So it was a very long time since I didn't spend that much time at my parents' house. So I think that's something that I'm grateful is, since my unemployment period was quite long, I got the chance to reconnect a lot with my extended family, with my sister, with childhood friends that I didn't have the chance to go and see them normally on a Tuesday night, you know, and watch a movie or have a conversation or something like that. So I think that was very, very nice that I got the chance to reconnect with my roots. And at the same time, because I think that because I had many interviews, there is one question that you will have no matter what process is, that is like, tell me about yourself, you know? And just trying to answer this question and the way that my question was evolving, I think that it's a reflection of the learnings that I had about myself, the things that I want to achieve, the things that I want to see myself going for. And I feel way more confident about who I am and what is the value that I can bring to any company that I'll be working for.
Yeah, I definitely share your opinion. And for me, I had like one of the job processes, like it was super close that I even did the physical interview back then in Germany, and then we did not agree on the salary. And then although like I was not in that place where I went for security, I let it go because it just not my value on the table, like I said before. So it was liberating at the same time, because like, you know, putting your value on the table and understanding really who you are going forward, it makes you a stronger person, I believe. And that's very, very important.
Just one. It's. I think it's the most important part because sometimes when we're unemployed, we get desperate, so we just take the first thing that comes on the table. So in that moment, at that specific 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, it seems important, but we don't think on how that affects us on the long term. So I think what you say is very important. You should know your worth and walk out from opportunities who do not cater to you, even when you are in need, because okay, you're going to get a job, but you're going to be miserable for the next 9 months, 12 months, 1 year, 2 years. So it's very important to know your worth, and you don't have necessarily to accept anything when you are unemployed. Okay, you have less bargaining power, but there are things that you should not give up or give away.
Yeah. And I think that goes back to also the non-negotiables of Juano. Very important, like to set your non-negotiables in the very beginning and have them. Awesome. 100% sure is that a lot of things comes to perspective and how we look at things. And this whole podcast, one of my favorite words is perspective. So even beyond unemployment, I always ask this to my guests, what is like the one perspective in life, even beyond today's topic, that you want to challenge people about or look at it from a different perspective, just to close this this episode with you guys. So anyone who has it, you can just, or if you want to think of it.
Okay, I think that I can share that don't take anything for granted about like what you know. Like perceptions of people are very different. They come from different backgrounds, different cultures. So always listen actively to what other people can contribute to your life.
Awesome. Thank you, Juano.
And for me, I would add on to that and by saying empathize, empathize, and empathize. To me, learning how to be empathetic and empathize with other people has helped me, like he said, listen to what people have to say and be more of an active listener, because listening is nice, but being an active listener is great. So when you empathize with people, you're not walking in their shoes, but you understand more where they come from. So it's a real door opener for, in terms of everything, communication, relations, everything. So yes, listening to people and empathizing.
Cool. Thank you so much, Yasmin and Juano. It was a pleasure to have this conversation with you. And I
thank
hope
you.
It will bring value to every unemployed, fun employed out there. And yeah, see you the next episode.
Thank you, Ines.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. If this episode brought you value, share it with a friend that is unemployed and show him the real way to be fun employed. Or leave a review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Castbox, wherever you're listening to this episode too. Gracias.